Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello and welcome back to another classic replay with me, Justin Brierley from Unbelievable, here to introduce this week's show from the archive. This was first broadcast back in July 2011 when Richard Weikart, Professor of History at California State University, came on to debate Hitler's Nazi ideology, and he has drawn controversial conclusions regarding the role that Darwinism played in providing a rationale for Hitler. Well, Hector Avalos, the atheist professor of religious studies at Iowa State University, argued that Christian anti-Semitism was a more likely explanation for Nazi ideology. A really interesting debate, this one, a feisty one. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, you can find many more shows from the Unbelievable archive at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. It's great to have with me here in the studio in the UK, Richard, and over in the States via a radio link, so we've got him almost as if he were with us, Hector Avalos. We'll talk to Dr. Avalos in a moment, but Richard, thank you very much for coming on the programme today. Great to have you with me.
Thanks for having me here.
You've come over here to the UK for a conference in Oxford on the evolution of morality and the morality of evolution. This is an area, though, that you're quite controversial in. You've written books, and you were featured in the film Expelled, talking about why you believe Darwinism, as it were, was a necessary part of the Nazi ideology. Now, before we get into, we'll get into that, obviously, in today's discussion. But where are you coming from in terms of your background? What led you up to this particular kind of very unique area of research?
Well, while I was in graduate school, I was working on the reception of Darwinism of the German socialists in the late 19th century. And while I was doing that, I noticed that there were German Darwinists who were trying to replace Judeo-Christian ethics with evolutionary ethics. And so that got me interested in doing some research on the issue of evolutionary ethics. From the research on evolutionary ethics, I learned that their views of these evolutionary ethicists in the pre-World War I period sounded very similar to the Nazis, and so I drew the link.
Mm. A controversial one, as I've said,
yes.
But we're going to get into that discussion in the course of today's programme. Our other guest, as I say, via radio link from Iowa State University, is Dr. Hector Avalos. A very warm welcome to you, Dr. Avalos.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us today on the programme. This isn't the first time you guys have met in a radio discussion format, I know, on this particular topic. But why? What has sort of particularly made you interested in interacting with the results that Richard has come up with in his research, Dr. Avalos?
Well, actually, it goes back to before Dr. Weikart. I used to be a creationist, and I have switched my position to advocating evolution. I'm also an openly atheist biblical scholar, and I just see that the efforts from the Discovery Institute, which is one of the main promoters of intelligent design, to paint Darwinism as responsible for the Holocaust is part of a broader plan to undermine the teaching of evolution in America's schools. And so since I've had a longstanding interest in the creation and science and religion controversy, this drew my interest. I also have interest because I have researched Martin Luther quite a bit. I visited Wittenberg and done some work in Germany on Luther. And I'm about to release a book on slavery abolitionism and the ethics of biblical scholarship, which also brings me into the longer history of inequality, racism. And so I'm not at all new to either the study of racism, racialism in Christian history, as well as some of the German Lutheran scholarship.
Well, it sounds like that could be a fascinating program to have you back on for again, with in discussion with someone perhaps who takes a different view. But you are noted as an atheist in your field, in a sense, Dr. Avalos, and it would be fascinating one day to get you on the biblical criticism side of things as well in the future. But that's for another show. Today you join us for this discussion we're having on this question. And we're going to have, in this first section of the program, a quite strict format where we'll give a chance for Richard first and then Hector to reply in their statements, their opening statements on this question. Was Darwinism more important than Christian anti-Semitism in explaining Nazi ideology? And then time for rebuttal for you both before we go into a more open discussion on the back of that debate. So you're listening to Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley. Don't forget, if you hear anything on today's program that you'd like to interact with, get in touch with us about, you can always email me. That's unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can also get in touch via the Twitter account. UnbelievableJB is the handle. You can find us on Facebook, and all of this and much more available at the Premier website of Unbelievable. That's premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Podcast there, links to how to subscribe in iTunes and all sorts of other things, all available. premier.org.uk/unbelievable.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, let's start off with you then, Richard. Just begin with you. We'll give you 7 minutes to start off with on your explanation of why you believe that Darwinism is more important in explaining Nazi ideology than Christian anti-Semitism.
Okay, in doing the research on my book, Hitler's Ethic, I read extensively in Hitler's speeches, his writings, also memoirs and writings by others who interacted with him. And when you want to try to ask the question of what was the core of Hitler's ideology, it seems to me pretty clear that the core was his notion of history being a racial struggle for existence. Hitler uses this term, struggle for existence, Daseinskampf or Lebenskampf in German, quite extensively. And this is coming from an explicitly Darwinian perspective. Hitler explains it in Mein Kampf, in his second book, in many of his speeches and elsewhere, in explicitly Darwinian terms. He talks about the fact that there's population pressure, that is, the population's expanding faster than the food supply can possibly keep up with. So there's competition for scarce resources. And this then leads to biological improvement. And Hitler uses the term evolution or Höherentwicklung, which means higher evolution, in Mein Kampf and many other places, to describe this process of biological development. So this is explicitly Darwinian terms. That's what I just described to you is the way that Darwin himself described natural selection in The Origin of Species and also in The Descent of Man. So if we have to say what is sort of the core of his belief, it's this idea of the racial struggle for existence. Now, anti-Semitism is obviously an important part of that racial struggle for existence that's happening. No one's denying that anti-Semitism wasn't a very extremely important idea within Nazi ideology and, of course, in their policies, tragically. But there also was this element of Nordic racism that also targeted other races. It wasn't exclusive to the Jews. And there were hundreds of thousands of gypsies killed during the same time of the Holocaust. There were half black Africans who were sterilized to try to keep their racial groups from procreating. There were Slavs that were targeted for racial discrimination. Anti-Semitism doesn't explain any of those other racial groups being targeted for persecution, whereas this notion of the Darwinian struggle for existence does explain many other features. Darwinism also explains quite a number of features of Nazi ideology and policies that were aimed at ways of trying to improve the Nordic race. So again, part of this Nordic racial ideal that includes anti-Semitism but also includes a whole lot more. So the Nazis in 1933 began a compulsory sterilization program where they compulsorily sterilized between 350 and 400,000 Germans to try to keep them from passing on what was considered their bad heredity. These were mostly disabled people, but the categories were actually pretty broad. It included alcoholics, people that were called work shy. There were quite a number of categories of people that were sterilized at that time. In fact, that was one half of 1% of the entire German population that was sterilized during those six-year periods. This is a pretty radical program and a pretty important program for the Nazis, but it didn't have anything to do with anti-Semitism. They also had a lot of pronatalist policies, trying to expand the German population as quickly as possible. They gave marriage loans to couples to allow them to get married at younger ages, and they would cancel some of that loan when you'd have children to try to get you to procreate as prolifically as possible. They gave mother's crosses to women who had four or six, or if you wanted a gold one, you had to have eight children to get a gold mother's cross. And so these were all things to encourage them to have the population to expand. Again, this has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. It has everything to do with a Darwinian framework where you're wanting your population to expand. They also then, in 1939 and 40, began killing the disabled, another very important part of their ideology. In fact, Henry Friedlander has written a book called The Origins of Nazi Genocide, where he argues that the so-called euthanasia program, the killing of the disabled, was the opening salvo in the Holocaust. And the people involved in that program of killing the disabled were – that was the training ground for the Holocaust. Those same physicians that were involved, they were transferred to the killing centers in the East where the Holocaust actually took place. And finally, one major component of Nazi policy and ideology that's explained by Darwinism but not explained by anti-Semitism is the idea of living space or Lebensraum, the idea that they needed to expand the race and do that in a military fashion. So World War II was caused in part by this mentality of we have to expand our living space. Now, you say, well, that doesn't sound very Darwinian. In actuality, the idea of living space was developed by Friedrich Ratzel, who is a German Darwinian biologist turned geographer who framed this term and wrote a book called Lebensraum and framed it in overtly Darwinian terms. It was struggle for existence, which involved a struggle for space. You have to have the space to be able then to manage your population. So all of these different programs being run by the Nazis, aside from the Holocaust, which I don't want to minimize either. I want to make that clear as well. Anti-Semitism is obviously very important, but there are lots of other elements of Nazi ideology that anti-Semitism cannot explain. And anti-Semitism actually can be explained as a part of this racial struggle for existence, which was underpinned by Darwinism.
Well, you've done that with a minute to spare as well. So well done, Richard. We're adopting a slightly different format, I should say, for regular listeners, where we're starting off with, as it were, some formal time for each party to set out their case and for a rebuttal from each. And as I say, we're discussing the question, and we've just heard the positive case, as it were, for Darwinism being more important than Christian anti-Semitism in explaining Nazi ideology from Richard Weikart. So, Dr. Avalos, Hector, time to hear your case against that statement. So if you'd like to go now, your 7 minutes begins now.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for agreeing to this discussion again, Dr. Weikart, and thank you, Mr. Barely, for giving us this opportunity. First, let's clarify the debate question to which Dr. Weikart has agreed. It was Darwinism more important than Christian anti-Semitism in explaining Nazi ideology? Now, given the question, Dr. Weikart cannot rest content with just showing the influence of Darwinism on Nazism. He has agreed to show that Darwinism was more important than Christian anti-Judaism. So far, he has only shown that Darwinism might have been influential or was influential, but not that it was more influential than Christian anti-Judaism. Secondly, it is important to know that on page 9 of his book, From Darwin to Hitler, he gives a very specific definition of Darwinism as, quote, the theory of evolution through natural selection as advanced by Darwin in The Origin of Species, which is a book published in 1859. Now, sometimes he brings in other works by Darwin, which is fine, but you know, we should try to keep to that definition. In any case, these are the reasons for which I think he's wrong. First, Dr. Weikart uses his terminology inconsistently because he repeatedly counts as Darwinism's feature opposed by Darwin or never endorsed by Darwin, but yet he does not count as Christian or as part of the Christian ethics Nazi practices that he claims were opposed to biblical teachings on the value of human life, eugenics, etc. Second, all of the supposedly characteristic features of Darwinism, excluding expansionism, including eugenics, seeing history as a racial struggle, are not unique to Darwin and pre-existed Darwin. They are part of a broader phenomenon that simply takes different forms in different periods. Now, the third reason is he uses historical precedents inconsistently because he will not acknowledge pre-Darwinian influence as clearly as he acknowledges preceding influences in cases of eugenics, where he criticizes some, for example, for not seeing German presidents for practices these scholars like Edwin Black attribute to American eugenics. So he uses precedents inconsistently. Four, Christians have been insulting, persecuting, killing, or exiling Jews for about 1,900 years prior to the Nazi regime. And one example is provided by Martin Luther on the father of Protestantism. You'd figure he is a representative of Judeo-Christian ethics. And in 1543, he published a tract called On the Jews and Their Lies, and he outlined a seven-point plan against the Jews. So let me quickly read these 7 points. All words are taken exactly as they are in the standard English edition, but with some ellipses. So let me start the quote. First, to set fire to their synagogues or schools and to bury and cover with dirt whatever will not burn, so that no man will ever again see a stone or cinder of them. This is to be done in honor of our Lord and Christendom, so that God might see that we are Christians and do not condone or knowingly tolerate such public lying, cursing, blaspheming of his son and of his Christians. Second, I advise that their houses also be razed and destroyed. Third, I advise that all their prayer books and Talmudic writings in which such idolatry, lies, cursing, and blasphemy are taught be taken from them. Fourth, I advise that safe conduct on the highways be abolished completely for the Jews. Sixth, I advise that usury be prohibited to them and that all cash and treasures of silver and gold be taken from them for safekeeping. Seventh, I recommend putting a flail, an axe, a hoe, a distaff, and a spindle into the hands of young, strong Jews and Jewesses and letting them earn their bread in the sweat of their brow as was imposed on the children of Adam, unquote. So every single element, from killing disobedient rabbis to consigning Jews to hard labor, is paralleled by the Nazi plan. In fact, so much so that Martin Bertram, the Lutheran translator of Luther's works here, said this, quote, "It is impossible to publish Luther's treatise today, however, without noting how similar his proposals were to the actions of the nationalist socialist regime in Germany in the 1930s and 40s, unquote. This is not coming from an atheist. That's coming from a Lutheran, Luther scholar. So Dr. Weikart has claimed that these are not analogous to what the Nazis did, because among other things, Luther thought to kill Jewish rabbis only. I will show that's not true. I will also show that every single thing that Dr. Weikart has identified as part of the Darwinian ideology, I can also find in Luther. And it is no surprise that Hitler, in Mein Kampf, mentions Luther specifically as one of his heroes. As he phrased it, quote, "Beside Frederick the Great stands Martin Luther as well as Richard Wagner," unquote. Darwin is nowhere found in his list of heroes in Mein Kampf. In fact, Darwin is not ever quoted in Mein Kampf or in any work that I can see from Hitler. So I have these three questions for Dr. Weikart and for our audience. First, Dr. Weikart, of the seven actions mentioned by Luther, are you denying that the Nazis carried out any of them? Second, could you give us a passage from On the Origin of Species or from The Descent of Man where Darwin outlines anything similar to Luther's seven-point plan for the Jews? And third, why not mention in your book, From Darwin to Hitler, the fact that Luther had a plan similar to the Nazis hundreds of years before Darwin, since you have insisted that similarity is what should establish the precedent for an action? So I'd like to hear those comments from Dr. Weikart.
Thank you very much. We're in a timed format of our discussion today for Unbelievable, and we've just heard the opening presentations from, firstly, Richard Weikart and then Dr. Avalos on this question of whether Darwinism was more important than Christian anti-Semitism in explaining Nazi ideology. I'm bursting with questions, but I'm going to have to hold them off till the second part of today's programme as we just hear now the rebuttals on both sides, and we'll start a 5-minute rebuttal if you wish to use all the time. Richard? From you now to what Dr. Avalos has just said.
Okay, one of the opening things that Hector said was that I hadn't shown that that Darwinism was more important, but in fact I certainly did, because I showed that it explains many, many more things about Nazi ideology and policies than can anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism certainly explains some of the things that Hector has laid out for us. It does explain some of the violent attitudes toward the Jews. It explains elements of the Holocaust. But it doesn't explain how the Nazis treated the disabled. It doesn't explain how the Nazis were pronatalist. It doesn't explain how the Nazis were launching expansionist warfare. And yes, I don't think those things are in Luther. You made the comment that all of the things that is in Hitler is in Luther. Well, by no means. Was Luther teaching expansionist warfare against the Slavs to take over Lebensraum? Was Luther teaching that you should kill Jews who'd already converted to Christianity? So no, Luther wasn't. Everything in Hitler was not in Luther. There are some things in Luther that are there, and I'm not denying that. I'm not denying some of that connection. But it's not just a matter of similarity. It's a matter also of causation, that is, who the ideas were coming from and who Hitler was being influenced by at the particular time. So I'm not denying that some of Luther's ideas could have been influential in anti-Semitic discourse in Germany that could have influenced Hitler. I don't have a problem with that. In fact, you said that I don't acknowledge pre-Darwinian elements, but I most certainly do. In my book, if you read the introduction of both my books, From Darwin to Hitler and Hitler's Ethic, in both those works, I do acknowledge that there's all sorts of influences that influenced Hitler beyond Darwinism. World War I, Schopenhauer, Wagner, Nietzsche, Prussian militarism. There's all sorts of influences on Hitler that I do acknowledge. So it's not like I pretend those don't exist. Concerning my use of the origin of species and the definition, that's a definition of Darwinism that says that Darwinism is biological evolution or transmutation of species via natural selection. Does not own that. I'm talking about Darwinism. Darwin doesn't own that definition. And many people who are Darwinists after Darwin believed things that may have been consistent with – put it this way. Many people after Darwin may have taken his ideas in different directions that maybe Darwin wasn't particularly comfortable with. Ernst Haeckel was a Darwinist, and I don't know why you would deny that he would be a Darwinist, because he believed in natural selection, biological evolution through natural selection. That's what Darwinism is. Ernst Haeckel, building on those ideas, thought that we needed to artificially select people to try to drive biological evolution forward, or at least to keep from biological degeneration. And he proposed using eugenics methods as well as killing the disabled. So he was the leading Darwinist in Germany. That is Darwinism. And Ernst Haeckel, by the way, the German Darwinist, he was the leading German Darwinist in the late 19th century, was the first German individual to suggest killing the disabled. So if we want to look at where did Nazi get that ideology from, Ernst Haeckel is a prime candidate for it. And I lay that out in great detail in my book, From Darwin to Hitler, and in Hitler's Ethic. The other individuals that I talk about, From Darwin to Hitler, I cover a wide range of individuals. Of course, I don't just talk about Darwin. In fact, Darwin's not even the main figure. I'm talking about Darwinists. These were all people who believed in Darwinism, the idea that biological evolution through natural selection. So I'm not using my terms inconsistently. I'm insisting that they are people that believe in biological evolution through natural selection. That's what Darwinism is. So I don't deny pre-Darwinian elements. I do show that it's more important because it explains many, many more things about the Nazis. And I do focus only on people who were self-identified as Darwinists. These people that I'm talking about, like Haeckel and others, these are guys that are identifying themselves as Darwinists. And by the way, evolution is laced in Mein Kampf. The word Entwicklung is the word for evolution, and it's all over in Mein Kampf, as is the word struggle for existence, which is also an evolutionary word.
Okay, thanks very much. That was Richard Weikart with his rebuttal. We're going to go to a quick break, and then Dr. Avalos will bring his rebuttal to the rebuttal. And then we'll be able to enter into a more free-flowing question time on this fascinating subject. We're asking today on Unbelievable, the program that brings Christians and non-Christians together for this kind of discussion and debate. The question, was Darwinism more important than Christian anti-Semitism in explaining Nazi ideology? And in the studio with me, Richard Weikart, who professor of history at California State University, and author of some pretty controversial books linking Darwinism to the rise of sort of Nazi eugenics, the Holocaust, the ways, the kind of doctrine of Aryan supremacy, etc. His books include From Darwin to Hitler and most recently Hitler's Ethic. But on the other side of this debate is Dr. Hector Avalos, who we'll hear from in just a moment's time, professor of religious studies at Iowa State University, an atheist himself, but author of many books as well in the field of biblical studies. But he particularly takes issue with the conclusions of my guest in the studio today, Richard Weikart. So keep listening, and we'll hear his response in just a moment's time here on the show that aims to get you thinking Unbelievable.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Fascinating program thus far. We're going to be going into a more sort of conversational aspect of it in just a moment's time, but we're going to hear the final rebuttal, as it were, in the first opening debate part of today's program. Looking at this question we've got on the table in front of us, was Darwinism more important than Christian anti-Semitism in explaining Nazi ideology? In the studio with me is Richard Weikart, professor of history at California State University, also a senior fellow for the Center for Science and Culture of the Discovery Institute. And anyone who's familiar with that organization will know that it certainly is very much involved in the area of intelligent design out in the States. It's come up for all sorts of criticism, but in the cultural and historical aspect, Richard's been doing work in whether there's a link between the eugenics and Nazi ideology of Hitler's regime with Darwinism. He believes there is, but against that position, Dr. Hector Avalos is on a radio line from Iowa State University, where he's professor of religious studies. He believes that the driving force behind Nazi ideology was Christian anti-Semitism. Well, we've been hearing a fascinating interchange between both my guests today, and time now for Dr. Hector Avalos for his final rebuttal in our debate section of today's program. If you'd like to go ahead with your response now, Dr.
Sure.
Hector. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. I think, first of all, I think Dr. Weikart misunderstood my question. My question was not whether everything in Hitler was in Luther. I asked, of the seven actions I described by Luther, are you denying the Nazis carried out any of them? So I hope he answered that question in a future segment. But let me go back to some of the things that Dr. Weikart thinks are Darwinist, and I say, no, they preceded Darwin. Let's look at the struggle in racial terms that he thinks is differentiating Hitler from Luther. On page 140 of On the Jews and Their Lies, Luther says this, quote, "There is one thing about which they, the Jews, boast and pride themselves beyond measure, and that is their descent from the foremost people on earth, from Abraham, Sarah, Rebecca, Jacob, and from the 12 patriarchs." He goes on to say, "Therefore, they boast of being the noblest, yes, the only people on earth. In comparison with them and in their eyes, we Gentiles are not human. In fact, we hardly deserve to be considered poor worms by them, for we are not of that high and noble blood lineage, birth, and descent. This is their argument, and indeed I think it is their greatest and strongest reason for pride and boasting." Now, that sounds like a racialist, biological statement and argument to me. Luther, unlike what Dr. Weikart has said before, that he only wanted to kill the rabbis. He did not. He wanted to kill all the Jews. On page 267 of the Jews and Their Lies, he says, quote, "We are at fault for not slaying them. Rather, we allow them to live freely in our midst, despite all their murdering, cursing, blaspheming, lying, and defaming. We protect and shield their synagogues, houses, life, and property," which is why he wanted to not do that. He also later repeats and elaborates on some of his first 7 points. And in the second time he does it, he goes further. He says, quote, "Third, that they be forbidden on pain of death to praise God, to give thanks, to pray, and to teach publicly among us and in our country," unquote. So that would include not just the rabbis, that would include everybody that praises God as a Jew. Now, Dr. Walker has said that Hitler saw the Jews as inherently criminal. Luther did the same. On page 242 of on the Jews and Their Lies, he says, quote, "Moreover, they are nothing but thieves and robbers who daily eat no morsel and wear no thread or clothing that they have not stolen or pilfered from us by means of their accursed usury." That's an unquote. As did Hitler, Luther believed that the Jews were engaged in a conspiracy to take over Germany and the world. Page 266, quote, "They hold us Christians captive in our own country. They let us work in the sweat of our brow and earn money and property while they sit behind the stove." And another passage on page 293, he says, quote, "You must suppose that it will be different at the time of the Messiah than it has been since the creation of the world." Goes on to say, "All will take course as it does now. Only the Jews will be masters and will possess all the world's gold, goods, joys, and delights, while we Christians will be their servants. This coincides entirely with the thoughts and teachings of Muhammad. He kills us Christians as the Jews would like to do, occupies our land," that's, you know, land allusion there, "and takes over our property, our joys, and our pleasures," unquote. So could you tell us again, Dr. Walker, where does Darwin say anything similar to this, and that it would be more similar than what Luther has said? And secondly, you have stated that Nazi ideology replaced Judeo-Christian ethics. But tell me, how do the actions by Luther uphold your claim that Hitler's ethics differed or replaced from Christian ethics, unless you don't regard Luther as a Christian figure?
Okay, well, thank you very much. So let's go into a more general time of discussion now, and I'm sure that there's points that you'd both like to address each other on. Richard, perhaps you'd like to come back briefly on what Hector's just said there, and perhaps then pose some of your own questions, and I'll throw some of mine in as we go. But go ahead if you want to kick us off.
Well, if I just start off on the last part that he made there. Luther's ethic, as expressed in his 1543 pamphlet, is simply not Christian ethics. I don't know of any Christian, well, let's put it this way, how did Jesus and the apostles teach that people, the Christians, were supposed to relate to the Jews? Now, you said that early in the show, you said that there's been 1900 years of violence against the Jews, or I don't know if you use the word violence, but of persecution of the Jews of some sort or other. But I would challenge that. For at least 350 years or more, there was not persecution or violence being exercised by Christians against Jews. That would be like going back to the 1600s for us today, and that's the historical distance from the time when Christianity was founded until the time when Theodosius and others began persecuting, and mostly pagans at that point. I don't know when the exact would have been persecution of Jews at that particular point there. I take your point, though, and I certainly agree with you, Hector, that it's a very sad and tragic chapter of church history, and it's not one I want to gloss over. And so I do want to say I certainly agree with you, and I'm horrified by the things that Luther wrote. And I'm not denying that Luther and many precursors of Luther, too. Luther wasn't the first one to say things like this either. Many Catholic and Of course, Luther was a founder of Protestantism, so the Protestant movement wasn't there. But even before Luther, many Catholics had said very horrible things. There had been pogroms against Jews. There had been violence against Jews. I'm not denying that that was an important thing that fed into Nazi anti-Semitism. It was. So I'm not denying the relevance whatsoever of that. And Luther and the precursors, it was a horrible part of church history that unfortunately didn't reflect the teachings of Jesus and the apostles.
And I wonder, Hector, if one of the things that Richard raised early on is that anti-Semitism does not explain the full scope of Nazi ideology, i.e. its eugenics program, the killing of the disabled, the sort of programs that were in place to, as it were, raise up this, you know, ideal specimen of a human being. That what do you say to that? That can't be attributed to anti-Semitism per se. Why do you believe that Darwinism is the incorrect sort of source for that particular kind of doctrine?
Well, because, and notice how he says Luther was not a Christian figure because he was teaching things opposed to what he thinks the Christian ethic is. So for him, deviations from his fundamental Christian ethic count as not Christian, but deviations from Darwin's works do not count as non-Darwinist. That's part of the inconsistency in Dr. Weikart's entire argumentation. Now, to answer your questions, every single one, I mean, I can find eugenics in the Bible. I can find expansionism in Christianity. I mean, if you look, for example, at the Alexandrine bulls, the bulls promulgated by Alexander VI in the 1490s, specifically Intercessor in 1493, he says that the mission of Christianity is to expand. And that's part of the reason that we have this colonization of Africa, colonization of the Americas, because they understood that Christianity required expansion. They required turning these barbarians into Christians. And sometimes it was through the ends justifies the means kind of thinking that Dr. Weikart thinks is part of Nazism and not part of the Judeo-Christian ethic. For example, you had Juan Sepulveda, who argued vehemently in the 1500s against Bartolomé de las Casas for enslaving the barbarians. And his argument was that you have to conquer them and enslave them first, because otherwise they will run away before they hear the Christian preaching. So you have to enslave them first. That's the ends justify the means again. So there's nothing in Luther, nothing really that has not been said before Luther as well. He asked, why do you say it goes 1900 years? Well, because Dr. Weikart, if you had read the book, if you have read the book from Heschel's on the Arian Christ and Erickson's book on the churches and how they betrayed Christianity, they have a picture there of a road sign in which they are quoting a biblical verse, and that verse is from John 8:44, in which Jesus says that the Jews, their father is Satan, it's the devil. And so that kind of hostility towards the Jews does begin at the time of Jesus. And it continues. I mean, if you look at the writings of Chrysostom in the 4th century, he has dialogues against the Jews that are very similar to what Luther said in 1543.
Let's allow Richard to respond to some of those points.
Okay, sure.
So firstly, that the other aspects of Nazi ideology could also be traced back to Christian culture and the Bible. Again, back to Luther and his precursors.
Well, you have to ask where Hitler himself actually got those ideas, though. And if you look at Lebensraum, one of the key ideas, for example, you're talking about expansion. Well, of course, expansion has been around for hundreds and thousands of years in various contexts and such. But Hitler actually latched onto this idea of Lebensraum directly through a Darwinian biologist turned geographer named Ratzel, who saw it as part of population expansion, which was necessary because of the struggle for existence, because of the Malthusian population principle of struggle for existence. So if you look at how Hitler actually directly got these ideas, he didn't get these ideas by reading or hearing about the people that you were talking about who were 400 or 500 years before him. He wasn't interested in them, but he was interested in reading some of these Darwinian thinkers, which he did, and that's where the idea. And I detail this in tremendous detail in From Darwin to Hitler and in Hitler's Ethic, that these are the sources for his ideas. He didn't get them from the sources that you're naming. Just one other quick point, though.
Sure.
About the Jews, I would like you to know if you could tell me an episode of Christian violence against Jews before the late 4th century. Jesus said salvation is of the Jews. He was a Jew. Paul was a Jew. Most of the apostles were Jews. The claim that he was calling the Jews of the devil, he was obviously not meaning that every Jew was of the devil. His apostles were right there with him.
Hector, what do you say?
Well, I disagree. Even Mr. Klinghoffer, another member of the Discovery Institute, traces anti-Judaism to the New Testament. I have the quotes from him if you want to read them.
But I said violence. I said violence against Jews.
And violence. But I mean, if you say the Jews are the sons of Satan, that is the start of how you're going to see these Jews as the other. And that's the start of violence, you know. So I know you may not agree that they are interpreting that verse correctly, perhaps, but the fact is they were on Nazi road signs, and so the Germans saw that as a reason to persecute the Jews. They did not have Darwin quotes on Nazi road signs.
They most certainly did.
That's a big difference. Well, okay, but let's suppose, if you can show me one, that'd be great. But I know there's one from John 8:44. Now, when you say what influenced him, in Mein Kampf, he tells you what influenced him. On page 55, he says his meeting with Carl Luger, who died in 1910, and he describes the meeting this way, quote, "Today, more than ever, I regard this man as the greatest German mayor of all times. How many of my basic principles were upset by this change in my attitude towards the Christian social movement? My view with regard to anti-Semitism thus succumbed to the passage of time, and this was my greatest transformation of all." He did not say it was reading Darwin's works that was the greatest transformation. He did not say it was reading Ratzel. He did not say it was reading Haeckel. He said this meeting with Carl Luger, who died by 1910, so by 1910 he's already on his way. And of course he's read Luther. He named Luther as a hero of his. I mean, Luther was a great German hero as well. So to say that Luther had no bearing on what he's thinking, and when you have hundreds and hundreds of years of Christian anti-Judaism, is really to deny something that's empirically not true.
And I didn't deny that. I admitted earlier in the show that Luther was an impact, but so was Schopenhauer, who was also anti-Semitic but was not a Christian. So was Wagner, who was also anti-Semitic but was not a Christian. So was actually the person who originated the term anti-Semitism, which was Wilhelm Marr. He was not a Christian. He was a vitriolic anti-Christian.
I mean, this raises the question which many people pose, which is, was Hitler a Christian or not? I mean, what's your take on where Hitler actually stood in terms of his relation to the church and to Christian faith, Richard?
Well, although I'm working on a book actually right now on Hitler's religion, and although Hitler publicly on occasions made comments pro-Christian, and he did also have an image of Jesus as driving the money-grubbing Jews out of the temple. That was his favorite Bible story. Mm-hmm. He does talk about that and Jesus as being Aryan. On the other hand, he was continually privately critical of both Christian churches, instituted policies which persecuted many Christians, and killed Christian Jews. Jews that converted to Christianity. That's a huge difference between Luther, by the way. Luther wanted to convert Jews to Christianity. Hitler did not want Jews to be converted to Christianity. He killed Jews that had converted to Christianity. If their grandparents were Jews, they were Christians, they were killed.
I mean, do you think then that he was using it as a political prop, if you like, the church? It was to further the ends of his political power, etc.
Yeah, I'll answer briefly and then let Hector in on here too, I think. But it was in one sense, but Hitler wasn't an atheist either. He did believe in some kind of higher power, but he was a pantheist or a deist, not a theist.
Mm. Hector, what's your thoughts on Hitler and his particular leanings?
I've written a chapter in a book called The Christian Delusion by John Loftus on this whole question. And I think what's going on is really a sectarian war. So it becomes a theological argument. What does Christian mean? Hitler said things that come right out of the Bible. He appeals to certain biblical verses. And I can show you some from Deuteronomy 23, for example. And so there's nothing that says I am not a Christian. Now, when he does talk about Christian in negative terms, that's only because he has a different vision of Christianity, and he sees what Catholics or others may practice is not true. But that's been the case throughout Christian history, where certain Christians will call others heretics and they're not Christians, and they go about destroying them. I mean, for example, Joseph II of Austria had a program of destroying monasteries, 700 or so, in about 1782. It was called Josephism. Nobody says, well, he's anti-Christian. No, he just doesn't like that form of Christianity. Henry VIII, the same thing. But let me address one specific point Dr. Weikart mentioned. He says that Luther was out to convert the Jews. That's definitely not true. If he reads on the Jews and their lies, page 137, he says, quote, "Much less do I propose to convert the Jews, for that is impossible," unquote. So, Dr. Weikart, where did you get the idea that Luther wanted to convert the Jews? Can you cite me a document like that?
Luther, it's well known that Luther, earlier in his career in ministry, did want and try to convert Jews. By 1543, he had become embittered because they didn't convert as he was hoping they would. And it has to be understood here, too, that there was no religious toleration in Europe at the time, which I'm not supporting. I'm horrified by it. And Luther was not, in my opinion, upholding the true Christian views that Jesus taught of loving your neighbor, turning the other cheek. Or as Paul said, if your enemy's hungry, give him food. If your enemy's thirsty, give him drink. That's not what Luther was saying, and so Luther was simply wrong in those things. I did not say, by the way, you said earlier that I'd claimed that Luther wasn't a Christian or something. That's not what I said. I said he wasn't representing the Christian ethic in that particular writing.
Hmm.
Okay. All right.
Did you have some more questions of your own, Hector? Because I want to give you a chance to put
yes,
the...
Yes, I should say that Dr. Weikart quoted a verse from Matthew 25, verse 41 and on, where it says, you know, give thirsty and all that. But he doesn't quote the rest of it, which says, those that do not cater to Christian needs will go into a lake of fire. So... Jesus, in my estimation, I wrote a book called Fighting Words where I explain, Jesus did not preach nonviolence. He preached deferred violence. That is to say, you're not supposed to be violent for now, because in the end, I'm going to come and get your enemies for you. And so that's not nonviolence at all. That's what Hitler was doing. It's very consistent with what he saw Jesus preaching, especially in John. And of course, what does he use to kill Jews? Burn. He burned them like hellfire. It's the equivalent. So I don't see much difference here.
Well, there's a huge difference. You just said deferred violence. That is, the Christians are not to exercise violence because God is going to do it in the end judgment. But that's quite different than Christians exercising it in this life before God does it. That's totally different. Well, I wasn't quoting Matthew 25. I was quoting Romans chapter 12, where Paul is citing, and he says, if your enemy is hungry, give him food. If he's thirsty, give him drink.
Yeah, but did you quote at Romans 13, where he goes further? Because if you do that, you will rain coals upon their head. In other words, the nicer you are to them, the worse they will have it in the end. And I talk about that specific passage in Fighting Words, and people are not reading the whole thing. He makes an allusion to Proverbs there, actually.
Yeah, that's right. But he also says, do not overcome evil with evil, but overcome evil with good. So the coals of fire that come are not from us. But that's what Hitler was doing. He was giving the coals of fire, you're saying. But that's the passage says specifically, don't give the coals of fire, because that's for God to do.
Yes, but Christians have also used Matthew 10:34. You know, I did not come to bring peace.
Isn't it a bit of a far stretch, though, Hector, to claim honestly that Jesus was in any sense like Hitler? I mean, most people will see Hitler as, if he had any sort of Christian faith, as having a very warped one, which was completely off kilter with the ethics of Jesus. I mean, it sounds like you're trying to make out that Jesus wasn't such a nice fellow either, and he would have, you know,
well, Hitler,
in the
like
same...
Earl, you mean he wants to kill all human beings? I don't know what you mean by that. What I'm trying to say is that anti-Judaism begins with the quotations of Jesus' own words in John, among other places. He says the Jews are going to get judgment if they do not accept him, and so forth. And the same throughout Christian history, that they've seen the Jews as unwilling to take advantage of the opportunity given to them, and therefore they see them as Christians can affect God's judgment on them. You know, a lot of those times in Christian history, they thought they were living near the end. So they thought they were the instruments of God's judgment near the end. That does not change.
We'll move on, and I just want to put something to Richard. I let the listeners know via my Facebook page that we were going to be having this discussion Richard. One of our atheist listeners got in touch saying, has Darwinism become prescriptive? When did this happen? The point being that he doesn't understand why you would say Darwinism was responsible for the actions of Hitler. I mean, Darwinism, as far as he's concerned, is just a law like any other law. Now, why would you say that therefore it created, you know, in what sense is it, right. Does it become prescriptive in that sense?
Yeah, well, for many people, Darwinism is descriptive, not prescriptive. And people who do use prescriptive language are usually identified as social Darwinists. That's the term that's often used and bandied about in that respect. In fact, Darwin himself made some kind of prescriptive prescriptive elements, rather, in The Descent of Man. Now, he didn't say anything like what Hitler was implying, okay, so I'm not implying that at all. But he did talk about, for example, primogeniture being a bad idea because it allowed the eldest son to inherit not based on biological aptitude or abilities and such, and so gave an unfair advantage in competition and such. And there were some other things that he put in there. They're basically mild stuff. I mean, I'm not trying to imply that he was prescribing the kinds of things later on that Hitler was. There were, however, other Darwinists who, such as Ernst Haeckel in Germany, and the Germans were. The German Darwinists were much more avid about applying these things to social matters and to ethical matters, who believed that we needed to try to drive evolution forward and make the evolutionary process itself the arbiter of morality. And so Ernst Haeckel then was promoting eugenics, and which is trying to improve the human race by various means, as well as euthanasia, killing the disabled, and infanticide and such to try to drive evolution forward. And so this was a pretty prominent idea in the late 19th and early 20th centuries especially.
And in that sense then, were they in some sense twisting the doctrine, the law, to their own ends? Or is it simply that the law of evolution, if you like, well, whether you believe it or not, is neutral as regards to what it then produces? It's people acting upon the information in that sense.
Yeah, well, I'm not making a philosophical argument, of course, in my book. But what they would have said, the people in the 1890s and first decade of the 20th century, what they would have said is they were applying Darwinism to society. That's how they would have seen it. Mm. And that's, in fact, how I believe the Nazis saw it as well. They were applying Darwinism to society. Now, of course, there were lots of philosophers and people both then and today who claim that's illegitimate. You can't do that. The naturalistic fallacy, you know, is trotted out quite frequently, saying that you can't do that. However, in the 1890s and early 1900s, most scientists and Darwinian thinkers, geneticists, anthropologists thought you could. And did believe that you could make a connection between applying Darwinism to society ethically, with eugenics program, with euthanasia, although that was a fairly radicalized wing of the movement.
Just briefly, Hector, any response to that aspect of how Darwinism did come to be prescriptive in some sense when it taken over?
Well, would Dr. Weikart ever describe deviations from Darwinism as perversions of Darwinism, like he does with Luther as a perversion of Christianity? Would he do that?
Would you do that? I mean, I'm not quite sure it's quite equivalent, but...
Well, I've said in my work that I'm not arguing philosophically for their case, so I am not trying to say that there's a philosophical entailment from Darwinism to these particular positions. But I do take it, and maybe I've misjudged your position, but I do take it that you are saying there is an entailment, a philosophical entailment from Luther to Hitler. I'm not arguing philosophically for these Darwinists and claiming that they've got a tight logical case. So I'm not saying that it wasn't distorted or perverted. But the reason I don't call it distorted and perverted is this. The leading Darwinists in Germany were promoting the same thing. This was not just some off-the-wall, you know, a lot of people get this idea, some off-the-wall, you know, guys that are, you know, just in a beer pub, you know, that these are not serious thinkers that are promoting these ideas that Hitler did. No, these were the leading scientists of the day. So if it was a perverted Darwinism, it was a perverted Darwinism that was perverted by the scientists themselves.
We're going to have to go to a quick break, and then we'll have a chance for you both to sum up your positions. What's been a fascinating program thus far on the question of Darwinism and anti-Semitism, asking which was more important in explaining Nazi ideology. My guest in the studio, Richard Weikart, Professor of History at California State University. His most recent book, Hitler's Ethic, deals in this very area, and make sure to post a link with the podcast of this programme to where you can buy that, premier.org.uk/unbelievable. And also post a link to information on our other guest who's been joining us by a radio link from Iowa State University, Dr. Hector Avalos. And we'll be hearing from them both in conclusion of today's programme in just a short moment's time. Let's start with you, Richard. Just 3 minutes now to conclude your thoughts on today's program.
Yeah, I wanted to sort of build on what Hector just mentioned, and that's this notion of the perversion of Darwinism, because I'm glad that he thinks it's a perversion of Darwinism, that Hitler was a perversion of Darwinism, and I'm glad that many Darwinists see that today and don't buy into racism and biological racism and such. However, we do have reemerging today a vital movement of Darwinists who are pushing evolutionary ethics and who are promoting ideas like infanticide. Peter Singer, for instance, has an endowed chair at Princeton University, and based on his Darwinian worldview, he thinks that we should allow infanticide, euthanasia, abortion, and such. And there's a Darwinian underpinning to all of that. So these ideas are still around. These are not just things that have disappeared and that somehow these are perverted forms of Darwinism that have been consigned to the dustbins of history. This is an ongoing debate. And I was just at a conference at Oxford University on the evolution of morality and the morality of evolution, where these questions were being hashed out by internationally respected scholars there. So this is still a live debate that's going on. And I'm glad that you are raising these issues about some of these horrible events of church history. And I think we need to confront those things. And I'm happy that you're doing that. However, again, I think it is worth noting it is worth understanding that many Christians, myself included, are just as horrified as you are by the things that Luther said and by many of these Christian leaders, and want to get back to what Jesus himself taught, which was to love all men, including and especially the Jews. In fact, Paul made it clear that he especially had love for the Jews, and he would lay down his life for the Jews in Romans chapters 9, 10, and especially 11. So I'm happy that you're raising these particular issues. Nonetheless, I don't think we can sweep the history under the rug that shows that there was a very direct connection, that Hitler did use Darwinian understanding. And all the different issues that I raised earlier about the eugenics, if you look at the way that Hitler reasons about them, he uses a very explicit Darwinian explanation for those things. And again, you can read about it in my books. I've got a full explanation there in Hitler's Ethics. So.
Great. Thank you very much, Richard, for being with us on the program today. And as I say, information and links to books, etc., with the Unbelievable podcast at premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Hector, if you'd like to finish up with your final thoughts on today's program.
Okay. Dr. Weikart agreed to show that Darwinism was more important than Christian anti-Judaism and explained the Nazi Holocaust. He did not do that. In fact, historically, he cannot do that. To do that, we have to erase 1,900 years of Christian anti-Judaism to seemingly blame Darwin, which is a standard procedure used by creationists and believers in intelligent design. Dr. Weikart could not produce anything in Darwin's writings that advocated killing Jews or using artificial selection to create a master race, but you can't find that in the Christian racialist literature before Darwin. Hitler explicitly said he saw Luther as a hero, never said that about Darwin. Today's intelligent design proponents preach that belief in a creator would avoid the human catastrophe supposedly brought by belief in evolution. The opposite is true. It is Hitler's belief in a version of intelligent design that was the factor in the Holocaust. Hitler believed that God had designed nature in a way that human beings should not violate. In fact, God-based ethics create more moral chaos because different people have different views of what God wants. This is why today you will have Christians who believe abortion is murder and Christians who believe abortion is not murder. There are Christians who believe homosexuality is a sin and Christians who believe homosexuality is not a sin. Killing children was part of the Hebrew Bible and the Bible in Deuteronomy. We have many passages or a few passages that say that. That's why is that different from a Judeo-Christian ethic? Now, strategically, his argument also makes no sense. Because in order for the Nazi leadership to convince millions of Germans that their mission was justified, they would have to use something that already would predispose people to persecute the Jews. In this case, the Christian anti-Judaism would do that. Darwinism would not, because most people had not read Darwin. Most Germans had not read Darwin. If you read Stedman Gall, the Holy Reich, he has figures from 1938, a report from 1938, which says that SS membership, 99% were either Protestant, Christian, Protestant Catholics, or God believers. In short, Hitler's Holocaust should make us realize the dangers posed by intelligent design proponents who tell us they know how God designed the world, like Hitler believed, and then want to tell us how to create a culture based on their view of God's design for the world.
Well, thank you very much, and plenty to think about there. And I wish we had more time to discuss some of those later aspects that you brought up in your final piece there, Hector. But thank you very much anyway for being with us today.
Thanks for listening to this week's classic replay on the Nazis. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find links to our newsletter, YouTube channel, ways to give, and much more besides. Our archive of past shows is all there at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. We'll see you next time.